From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Washington Watch. You made it. You've crossed the finish line. So join us for an hour. We have plenty to talk about. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at Family Research Council, filling in for Tony Perkins. After Israel banned Muslim Democratic Congresswomen Ilhan Omar of Minnesota and Rashida Tlaib of Michigan from entering the country during a planned visit, Israel's interior minister modified the original decision in order to permit Tlaib to visit her grandmother in the West Bank. But Tlaib decided her hate for Israel was greater than her love for her grandmother and turned down the accommodation. In just a moment, I'll talk with Mort Klein, president of the Zionist Organization of America, to get his take. In my second segment, Massachusetts Senator and Democratic presidential hopeful Elizabeth Warren pressed the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau on Paul Watkins, who has worked for the religious liberty group Alliance Defending Freedom. They cite the discredited Southern Poverty Law Center's so-called hate list, which lists Alliance Defending Freedom among our organization and other groups, claiming that it affirms, well, a biblical understanding of sexuality and marriage, shockingly. I'll talk with ADF Senior Counsel Matt Sharp. At the bottom of the hour, the San Francisco School Board voted 4-3 on Tuesday to cover a controversial 1936 mural at a local high school that includes images of George Washington, slavery, and the killing of a Native American. I've never been accused of lacking an opinion, so I'll give you my take. And at 42 past the hour, Marion Smith, who's the executive director of Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, wrote a compelling USA Today column entitled, "We're in a New Cold War. Hong Kong, like Berlin before it, is the first battle." I'll talk with Bob Fu, president of China Aid, for his reaction and thoughts and on whether or not tensions between Hong Kong and China might lead to another Tiananmen Square. As a reminder, TonyPerkins.com is our podcast website. I encourage you to go there for resources and links that you can use, action steps you can take, and information on today's guests. Follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins or me, if you'd like, at Sarah P. Perry. After Israel banned Muslim Democratic Congresswomen Ilhan Omar of Minnesota and Rashida Tlaib of Michigan from entering the country during a planned upcoming visit, Israel's interior minister modified the original decision in order to permit Tlaib to visit her grandmother in the West Bank as she had requested. Fox News reporter Trey Yingst filed a report from Jerusalem yesterday describing the controversy. Let's listen.
In a last-minute decision to ban these two congressmen from entering the country, Representatives Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib were scheduled to visit Israel on Friday. Suspected of promoting the Boycott, Divest, Sanctions, or BDS movement, the members will be denied access in accordance to an obscure 2017 law in Israel that allows the government to deny entry to those who encourage these actions within the movement. While Israel's interior minister is responsible for granting visas to all foreign citizens wishing to visit, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was likely consulted on the decision. Fox News can confirm that President Trump spoke with Prime Minister Netanyahu this week about the issue, and this morning the president tweeted, quote, "It would show great weakness if Israel allowed Rep. Omar and Rep. Tlaib to visit. They hate Israel and all Jewish people, and there is nothing that can be said or done to change their minds. Minnesota and Michigan will have a hard time putting them back in office. They are a disgrace." Reports do indicate that Israeli officials informed congressional leadership Wednesday night about the decision. Just last month, Israeli ambassador to the United States, Ron Dermer, said his country would not block any member of Congress from traveling here. Last week, 41 Democratic congressmen visited Israel, and this week, 31 Republicans are touring the country and holding meetings. Now, this tweet by President Trump this morning, certainly putting the prime minister in a difficult situation, sort of forcing him to double down on the decision. This will certainly appease the president, but is going to anger many House Democrats.
Well, this morning, Tlaib abruptly changed her mind, deciding she didn't want the accommodation and the entry after all, and saying she wouldn't visit under, quote, oppressive conditions, end quote. So apparently she hates Israel more than she loves her grandmother. Joining me with his analysis is Mort Klein, president of the Zionist Organization of America, an organization founded in 1897 with a national membership of 25,000. On the front lines of Jewish activism, ZOA fights to protect the Jewish people and the land of Israel. Mort, so glad to have you back on Washington Watch.
Great to be with clear-thinking Christians, the way you and your audience is.
Well, so let's be honest. According to Israeli newspaper Haaretz, the two lawmakers' supports for boycotts of Israel and its West Bank settlements could have been used under Israeli law to deny them entry. Now, whether or not this is an obscure rule, as the Fox reporter said, it is a law in Israel. Do you think that Israel made the right decision in initially denying both women entry to the country?
First of all, this law is not obscure. It passed only a year and a half ago. The Supreme Court said that Israel has every right to defend themselves from people who come there wishing them harm. They called supporting the boycotting and defaming Israel political terrorism. That's what the Supreme Court of Israel said. And these women, these congressmen, could have come with the 41 Democrats who came 2 weeks ago. They refused. The reason they refused is because these congressmen were going to meet with the members of the Knesset, Yod Yad Vashem, that speak to Jewish journalists. They didn't want any of that. They called their delegation a delegation to Palestine. Of course, there is no Palestine. It's Palestinian territories. They said they will not meet any Israeli leaders, even the far left-wing ones. They will not go to Yad Vashem. They'll meet with no journalists. Their purpose was very simple, to go to the Temple Mount and other areas to publicly use this as a basis to condemn Israel from Israel in every way they could. Israel said, we're not going to give you that platform, they did the right thing. We in America, we have not allowed other government officials from coming to America. We didn't allow Kurt Waldheim, who was a former head of the United Nations, to come to America because it was Nazi past. We haven't let members of parliament from other countries, when they had very hostile and extreme views, we wouldn't let them come here. This is something that countries do. These people have said very clearly that they want Israel, one state from the river to the sea, which means no Israel. They're against Israel's existence. And let me tell you something else. They have demanded judges show compassion to ISIS and other terrorists. When asked about 9/11, Omar Tlaib said these are some people who did something.
Right.
When asked about, do you support al-Qaeda, they refused to answer. They publicly support Maduro of Venezuela, this vicious, murderous communist. Tlaib has brought in a number of Hezbollah supporters. This is a vicious terrorist group on the U.S. list of terrorist nations. To come to her office, she takes smiling pictures with them, praises these killers. She's publicly praised Razmiya Odeh in her office. This is a woman who was convicted of murder in Israel. And this is really a terrible woman. You know, you mentioned they didn't allow two Muslim women. It had nothing to do with their religion. If this were two Christian males who are espousing these views, Israel wouldn't let them in. It has nothing
Absolutely.
To do with their religion, nothing to do with their gender.
These two women in particular, and we know that they are part of the colloquially termed Gang of Four, which honestly I think gives them too much credit because it's branded them in a way that I think honestly makes me uncomfortable. I don't want them to have these catchy little slogans. But let's set the two of them aside because two of the others are radicalized sympathizers. But I'm going to deal directly with Omar and I'm going to deal with Tlaib. Both of these women, they co-sponsored a House resolution just a month ago affirming that all Americans, quote, have the right to participate in boycotts in pursuit of civil and human rights at home and abroad, end quote. Now, it doesn't mention Israel by name, but these two women know exactly what they're doing. This is a veiled reference, not too terribly thickly veiled reference to the boycott, divest, and sanction movement, which is ultimately designed to destroy the country of Israel in the first place. So we understand where these women are coming from. Does the fact that they are elected officials from the United States, does that compel you at all to modify your original thinking that this was an appropriate decision?
If David Duke and Louis Farrakhan were elected to Congress, Israel would not allow them to come in, nor should they. No. If there are people in Congress who are threatening Israel or any country with its destruction and defaming it and praising terrorists, these women have praised terrorists. These women have praised Imam Suleiman, a man mm-hmm. who has praised terrorism, urged terrorism against Israel. By the way, this was funded by Mishkan, a group which talks about the blood libel, that Jews are killing Christian babies to get their blood, which, of course, is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
And that's who helped fund this trip of theirs. And should we in America have people come in who are communists, who want to overthrow our government, who want to hurt America from inside? No, we shouldn't let them in. Israel shouldn't let in anyone who wants to end Israel as a Jewish state. And they did absolutely the right thing. Remember, Omar has publicly said the only reason we Americans support Israel is because of bribes, that we give people money for this, which, of course, is absurd. She called Israel evil. She said Israel has hypnotized the world to support it. I mean, by the way, Tlaib, when she was elected, she wrapped herself in the Palestinian Authority flag, a terrorist regime's flag.
Yes, she's
celebrating
did.
Her victory, and she went to the map on her wall in her office, and where it said Israel, she put a stickum, a yellow stickum on it, wrote in Palestine to cover Israel. And let me tell you something else. When it came to the Holocaust, she actually said when she thinks about the Holocaust, it gives her a calming feeling, and she said Palestinians lost their lives providing safe haven for Jews. What a lie. Mm-hmm. Six
right.
Arab nations invaded Israel to destroy it after the Holocaust. These are liars, they're haters, and they hate America almost as much as they hate Israel.
The two congressmen were expected to tour the West Bank under the auspices of Miftah. You referenced this briefly, an organization headed by a longtime Palestinian lawmaker, Hanan Ashri. The congresswomen were planning to visit Hebron and Ramallah, Bethlehem, and, of course, the Temple Mount, and they set themselves apart repeatedly so that they have an opportunity to stand separate and force to a boiling point tensions not only in the Middle East, but to directly use a bully pulpit to convey the message that Israel is illegally occupying Palestinian Authority territory, when in fact it is precisely, as we know so well, and if you are a student of Jewish history or you even crack an honest history book, you understand it's the other way around. You're listening to Washington Watch. Mort Klein has been my guest from Zionist Organization of America. I am Sarah Perry. I am sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Coming up next, well, Elizabeth Warren is in the news again. The Massachusetts senator and Dem presidential hopeful likes to rely on an organization with whom we take a smidge of issue when pressing Consumer Financial Protection Bureau on Paul Watkins, who happened to work for a, quote, hate group. We'll be right back.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. end birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C., and learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Are you looking for timely and honest coverage of the latest news? Do you find it difficult to sort out what is true and what is false from the media? Family Research Council is here to help. FRC President Tony Perkins' daily Washington Update email newsletter addresses the most important current events affecting religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from underreported stories about transgender activists' efforts to infiltrate our schools to updates on court cases fighting for religious freedom, parental rights, and the protection of life. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Learn more and subscribe by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships. I am sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Friday afternoon. Democratic presidential candidate and apparent woman of the people. Remember, she had to grab me a beer, as she said on her Instagram feed. She pressed the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau about Paul Watkins. Now, Paul has worked for the Religious Liberty Group, Alliance Defending Freedom, the same group that has won at least 9 times in a row at the Supreme Court. It is now the official in charge of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's Office of Innovation. But Elizabeth Warren says he's worked for a, quote, hate group. Well, I happen to know where that comes from. Joining me now with his analysis is Alliance Defending Freedom Senior Counsel, Matt Sharp. Matt, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on.
So Senator Warren and the other House Dems that wrote this letter to CFPB's director, Kathy Kraninger, said, we have, quote, grave concerns about Mr. Watkins holding the authority to waive anti-discrimination laws given his prior employment at ADF, a group that has been designated as a hate group by, wait for it, the Southern Poverty Law Center, end quote. Matt, are you surprised that anyone anywhere, including Democrats, are still clinging mindlessly and frenetically to the discredited SPLC and their ridiculous hate list?
Yeah, it is shocking that anyone continues to give anything the SPLC has to say on these matters any credibility whatsoever. We all know how that they have lost their credibility, whether it was the millions of dollars that they paid in settlement because of a piece and allegations they had made about someone being an anti-Muslim extremist, even a lot of very left-wing groups and journalist groups, Politico and others, are calling the SPLC out, saying that it's lost its way. It's nothing more than a progressive hit operation and has sort of lost its original founding of what it intended to do. And so I think it is far past time for anyone, especially our elected representatives, to be listening to anything the SPLC has to say on these matters.
Well, it's not the first time they have sent a letter. In fact, back in June, they objected to your former colleague at ADF, Paul Watkins, from even getting hired initially at the CFPB. So this is essentially their second kick at the can, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is part of the broader attacks we're seeing against conservatives, against people of faith, where at these hearings, whenever anyone's placed up for a position where Congress and the Senate has a chance to go after them, they're targeting people of faith, imposing a religious test upon them. So we saw it with some of the hearings for judges, of whether it was Amy Coney Barrett and being asked whether about the dogma living loud in her to others who have had affiliations with Knights of Columbus and other groups. We're seeing this ongoing pattern of saying, oh, you worked for this religious group or you held these religious beliefs, therefore you are somehow disqualified from serving our country. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a thing we all ought to be terrified from, of Congress imposing these religious tests and telling people of faith that they're not welcome to serve their government, to serve their country.
And in fact, relying on an organization like the SPLC that utilizes its own hammer of hate, which, as they know, as any good lawyer knows, skates the line. It's not libel, it's not slander, it's not defamation. They have used a very fungible term that is easily classifiable, but not easy to sue upon, to throw everyone who disagrees with them in the same category as the Ku Klux Klan, racist skinheads, and neo-Nazis. And in fact, Bob Moser's piece recently released about a few weeks ago in the New Yorker, a former employee who identifies as a homosexual, has nothing in common with conservative Christians, had to say that it was a scam, that when he was hired, another employee told him, you didn't do your homework. These people are hucksters, and P.S., not well-liked in their own home state. So when they wrote this letter, one of the things they claimed was that they were concerned Watkins would be unilaterally given the ability to grant immunity from bedrock anti-discrimination laws. What do you say to that, Matt?
Yeah, I think this is ridiculous. So Paul worked at ADF on alumni services with our Blackstone Legal Fellowship. He worked for leadership training for law students. He's had a distinguished career working for the state of Arizona and other places, and has demonstrated himself to be an upstanding servant. I think these are baseless accusations. I think they are parroting the claims of SPLC and all of these other groups. And again, this goes back to this sort of anti-Christian, anti-religious animosity of telling people, oh, because of your faith, you're going to do these terrible things and you're going to do these bad things. And it's simply not backed up, whether it's the claims against Jack Phillips saying, oh, you refuse to serve gay people. That's false. He served everyone that walked in his shop. But it's this presumption that people of faith cannot love and serve others and do their jobs. And I think that's simply false. And we have to call it out for what it is, which is anti-Christian, anti-religious animosity.
I wholeheartedly agree, and I will tell you this, this is an MO of the left. If you take a lie and you repeat it often enough, it is harder to come up against. That is, after all, the Alinsky method of politics, is it not? Saul Alinsky himself, you make them believe the lie. And so, for example, in the Jack Phillips case, to say he refused service to homosexuals is a heady soundbite. It sounds salacious. It is something upon which you can hang your hat if you are a progressive. But when you refuse to make the connection between service on a homosexual wedding and the connection to one's religious beliefs about the nature of marriage and God's involvement in it, it is not only lazy journalism. It leads me to think these senators are themselves lazy in relying on such classifications. Matt Sharp has been my guest with Alliance Defending Freedom. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships. Well, coming up, more to be passionate about. The San Francisco School Board voted 4-3 on Tuesday to cover a historic mural. Well, it's George Washington this time. I'll have my ideas on this coming up next on Washington Watch.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood was hiding behind terms like reproductive health care and services like cancer screenings and contraception distribution, while in reality, they were making money off of abortions. This shift in funding will benefit community health centers that provide needy families with family planning resources and health services, regardless of their ability to pay. It will also benefit pregnancy resource centers that provide care and free resources to women who may be experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. This policy decision is the right move to help and protect American lives. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10. That's frc.org/Title 10.
Hi, my name is Bailey. I am serving as an intern at Family Research Council, and it has been a life-changing experience. Interns join FRC's team of experts as they embark upon the mission of advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. The FRC internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students who are passionate about public service and who believe that a biblical worldview is fundamental to the reformation of government and culture. As interns, we receive the opportunity to work alongside and be personally and professionally developed by FRC's team of experts. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC, which allows us to be fully immersed in the fast-paced political climate and to build a community with other faithful conservatives in our nation's capital. For more information and to apply, visit frc.org/internships. That's frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry. I am sitting in for Tony Perkins. As a reminder, TonyPerkins.com is our podcast website. Go there for more information about the guests and topics and resources we have referenced here and some of our action items for FRC. Well, they've come for Thomas Jefferson. They have come for Confederate generals. And now they are coming for George Washington. A controversial mural that, to my mind, isn't controversial, was just this week voted on by the San Francisco School Board in a 4-3 vote, in which they determined a mealy-mouthed solution to the fact that it had generated controversy. It is a 1936 mural at a local high school. It includes images of slavery and the killing of a Native American. Here is the proposal and the solution, according to the San Francisco School Board. This 13-panel Life of Washington piece will be preserved and not whitewash painted, as originally determined, but covered by panels that show the heroism of people of color in America, how we have fought against and continue to battle discrimination, racism, hatred, and poverty. Those are the San Francisco School Board president and his suggestion for the way to move forward. Now, I have absolutely no concern with the advancement and, in fact, think more is needed artistically of the contributions and heroism of people of color in the United States. However, not at the cost of eliminating our shared American history. This is a 1,600-square-foot mural at George Washington High School. Yes, George Washington High School. Those in favor of keeping the mural said removing it was historic and artistic censorship. Initially, the school board was going to whitewash it. Now they are going to simply cover it with new panels. Now, I'm going to quote someone to you who understands this from an artistic perspective, not a conservative, but an art critic. She is chief art critic at the New York Times. Roberta Smith had this to say, saying exposure to art, even uncomfortable art, is healthy stimulating, worthy of students' debate, is appropriate. In fact, she said, quote, once art has been made and released into the often choppy flow of life, it should stay there. It will, after all, live on anyway. To dictate its elimination is implicitly autocratic, similar in spirit, if not scale, to the deliberate demolition of ancient art and artifacts by the Taliban and the Islamic State. The offended parties in and around the high school assume that their feelings about the murals are permanent and paramount. Those poor offended souls, my editorial insertion. Quote, those favoring destruction think that they know what the art is about and that they have the right to decide for everyone now and in the future what will be accessible and what will be known. But reactions to art are in constant flux, and the best art should contain multitudes of interpretations. The inclusion of slavery and the death of a Native American, these are among the scars on this country that every American, school child or adult of any race, should learn about in detail, keep learning about, and never forget. Now, a word about the mural. Painted in 1936 under the auspices of the Works Progress Administration, which created jobs for unemployed workers, it is the work of a Russian emigre and communist named Viktor Arnatov. Listen when I say to you that when he painted this mural, it was designed, and he said as much, to be critical of George Washington, with whom he had issues about slaves and the ownership of human beings. In fact, he painted it in such a way that the Native Americans appear vigorous, joyful, strong. Even the scale he used communicated the idea that George Washington was wrong, and that this was an uncomfortable part of his history. Here is the problem. When we begin to eliminate our historical recollections, our knowledge of what has transpired, and in fact, even in this case, by an individual critiquing our history, so we have become essentially, here's your new hashtag, double woke. Now, they want to paint over. They want to hide the mural. They hide the mural because the history is inconvenient. However, the history was painted by a critic of George Washington himself, a woke Russian communist from the 1930s. I will quote to you George Orwell and a statement he made about the history in the present. Whoever controls the image and information of the past determines what and how future generations will think. Whoever controls the information and images of the present determines how those same people will view the past. He who controls the past commands the future. George Orwell and the critics of double woke art. You're listening to Washington Watch. Coming up next, what is happening in Hong Kong and China? Is it leading to a new Tiananmen Square type tension? And where is our breaking point? Bob Fu with China Aid joins me with his reaction.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically, This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christian's call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C., and I would like to invite you to join my wife, Luana, and I, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the garden tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins, TonyPerkins.com, our podcast website. Well, yesterday, an op-ed was published in USA Today. It is titled, "We Are in a New Cold War. Hong Kong, like Berlin before it, is the first battle." The op-ed was published by Marion Smith, who is the executive director of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Smith asks the following, quote, "Would the United States have let the Soviet Union invade West Berlin? Never. Yet America is on the verge of allowing communist China to enslave the free city of Hong Kong. If this happens, it will be one of the greatest abdications of U.S. moral leadership in history. Right now, communist China is amassing paramilitary forces on its border with Hong Kong. The purpose appears obvious: intimidate the pro-freedom movement that has brought parts of the city to a standstill in recent weeks. Meanwhile, Beijing's rulers have labeled Hong Kong's protesters terrorists, while stating that those who play with fire will perish by it. The echoes of the Tiananmen Square massacre 30 years ago are unmistakable," end quote. Well, Fox News Channel's Allison Barber filed a report recently on the situation in Hong Kong. You can hear in the background of this audio clip the stunning sounds of over a million protesters in the streets. Let's listen.
For nearly 9 weeks, anti-government protests have rocked Hong Kong. Protesters say if the government thinks they are going to give up, the government is sorely mistaken. On Saturday, protesters and police clashed well into the night in parts of the semi-autonomous territory. Police reportedly used tear gas with little to no warning after hundreds of protesters blocked an intersection. Thousands of protesters gathered at Hong Kong's international airport as well, most wearing black, some covering their faces, some handing out pamphlets, others holding signs, all of them seeming to protest peacefully in one of the busiest airports in the world.
Our government still to this day didn't respond to our five demands. After 2 million people marching out, they didn't respond positively. So this is why we're still here.
The Hong Kong protest began 2 months ago after the government tried to introduce legislation allowing defendants to be extradited to mainland China, where courts are controlled by the ruling Communist Party. The controversial bill was suspended, but the protests continue. Activists say they are about something bigger now. They want more freedom, greater democracy, and they want Hong Kong's top leader to resign.
Joining me now with his analysis of the growing conflict between Hong Kong and China is Bob Fu. He is the president of China Aid, and back in 1989, he was one of the Chinese student protesters in Tiananmen Square and watched the Chinese military guard kill hundreds of his fellow student protesters. Bob, we love having you. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Sarah, for having me again.
Bob, I have to ask you, are you worried after hearing the opening salvo of that piece in USA Today, but specifically knowing what you understand intimately about this level of conflict between Hong Kong and China, are you worried that the escalating conflict could lead to another Tiananmen Square type massacre?
Sarah, I'm very, very worried. And 30 years ago, when we were in the Tiananmen Square, and initially, when some of the military trucks were kind of on the way to Beijing, and even some of the students' leaders were still naively thinking, it's a Communist Party, it's just a real threat, and they will never take military action. But 30 years later, when we already know, and even President Trump tweeted that the Chinese military police has amassed massively in the neighboring city of Hong Kong, and some reports are already showing some truckloads with military police from mainland China already entered into Hong Kong. So apparently there is a likelihood even to see that the Communist Party is going to take military action to have a bloody crackdown. So we all are holding our breath and praying on that. Leader of the free world, I urge President Trump really to take more decisive actions, and the congressional leaders to speak with one voice to tell Beijing, stop or facing serious, serious consequences.
Now, for those who have not been paying careful attention to this story, and I have been absolutely locked into this story because I see it so clearly as a bellwether for the future of the world, and it is so clearly that the Chinese communist superpower would start with Hong Kong, but there is no telling where they might go. So for people who haven't been paying attention, we need a little backstory. There are millions of protesters. They have blocked streets. They have blocked airports. Yes. This has been going on 2.5 months. This ultimately centers or began with an extradition bill. So can you explain that a little bit to us?
Yes. When Communist China took over Hong Kong from the United Kingdom in 1997, they made an international commitment registered in the United Nations that the Hong Kong's democracy and freedom, their lifestyle, would remain for at least 50 years. And now, of course, under President Xi Jinping, these promises has already broken. And so really, this extradition bill will enable the Chinese Communist police and the court system and even by kidnapping, to get anybody they don't like back to Chinese court, to the Communist court for trial, even for foreigners. So anyone would not be excluded. So this extradition bill, if it's passed, is again basically it's the life, the last lifeline for a free Hong Kong. So this is about really freedom, democracy, or the Chinese Communist Party's total control of dictatorship in Hong Kong.
Now, Carrie Lam is their chief executive there in Hong Kong, and she has claimed that the controversy is concluded, that the extradition bill will not be a problem, that it will not be applied. But they really feel that Carrie is a sellout, and they're calling for her resignation. What do you think that would accomplish? Would calling on her resignation and succeeding in acquiring it, would that change the course of where things are headed?
I think that's a first step. If you see the protesters' 5 points of unanimous demand, that it was to ask Carrie Lam to make it clear that this extradition bill will be withdrawn, will never be raised up. So that was the core of the demand. So her resignation, of course, is another amendment of police excessive violence against the peaceful protesters, and using this major, you know, force, tear gas and other kind of bullets to shoot in short distance, you know, within 1 meter to the protesters. So it's a really total disastrous mismanagement as a chief executive. And so I think this is, just the initial step. And certainly that will at least show to the protesters the Hong Kong government is sincere.
So Marion Smith, when he wrote this op-ed, referenced the fact that the United States always made clear during the situation in West Berlin that we would defend the city. And John F. Kennedy and Ronald Reagan traveled there personally when there was active conflict or growing conflict. They were proving to the residents that America stood with them and for the cause of freedom. Do you think President Trump ought to do the exact same thing?
Oh, absolutely. I think much is at stake. You know, Hong Kong, if we allow the Communist Party to have a pass to take over with violence and with the bloody crackdown against the peaceful protesters in Hong Kong, and it will give President Xi Jinping and his communist thuggish regime a green light to take over. You know, the next one would be, you know, after Berlin would be the Poland. It will be other countries. I mean, the Communist Party is already aggressively, you know, in South China Sea, you know, and many other areas. So this is a kind of a front line for freedom. I think President Trump is now becoming aware, and in the past few days he has been tweeting more, basically telling President Xi to have peaceful dialogue and meeting with the protesters face to face, and I think, and even hinted that the Beijing-Washington trade deal could be related with the Hong Kong. I mean, mm-hmm. The United States is the second largest trade partner with Hong Kong. Every year is nearly $700 billion trade volume with the United States and Hong Kong.
So Marion Smith also categorized this as a new Cold War, and that Berlin in 1948 was sort of the warning shot of a decades-long freedom struggle between democracy and communism. And with Beijing's crackdown on Hong Kong already well underway, I am almost disinclined to agree with the conclusion that this is a new Cold War, because it very much feels like an active conflict, if not today, then within the matter of a few short weeks. These students have made clear, these individuals, these freedom lovers in Hong Kong have said, we will not back down. So to me, it seems we have pushed past the level of Cold War into inevitable heated conflict. Do you agree?
Well, I would really would agree. I think this weekend, the August 18th, would be a milestone where the protesters had already called for major bigger protests and a strike everywhere. And the Chinese communist propaganda already labeled protesters as terrorists, as a kind of Western, kind of American-led, kind of orchestrated color revolution instigators. So they are setting pretext for military intervention and the crackdown. So we are really on a brink of a major conflict. I think the question is whether our the leaders of the free world, especially the United States, we have the resolve. We like President Reagan, like Margaret Thatcher, to stand up to this communist ideologue and to this thuggish regime, and that enough's enough. This is the red line, and we will not allow you to crush the true freedom like the repeat the Berlin situation in 1945.
I will say that I am hopeful that the United States has the will to win. But what I don't hear enough of is discussion about the evils of communism. As Vladimir Lenin wrote, socialism's goal is communism. And when we elect individuals to the highest offices in the land who identify as democratic socialists and understanding the course of history, that nothing good comes from pure socialism. I give you Venezuela. And understanding that socialism's ultimate outcome is communism. Do we need to communicate more virulently, more passionately, that communism is a repressive regime and that the human rights abuses that we've seen are only the beginning of what could transpire for the rest of the world?
Yes, Sarah, you articulate so well. I think that's a really a very a worrisome thing in the United States, that because of we took our freedoms so much for granted, and our younger generation had been under some kind of brainwash by some extreme leftist ideologue, and we somehow did not treat the communism, socialism as seriously as before, and we are undercutting actually that the argument that the evil empire is a true evil. I mean, we somehow give them a pass. So I think it's time really to send an unequivocal bipartisan voice. I should really give credit to on this issue, on the trade with China issue, give credit to Democratic leader, even Chuck Schumer, and Nancy Pelosi, and they did send some very clear signal that they are standing with the Hong Kongers, with the freedom fighters in Hong Kong, and against the Beijing's aggressive tactic and possible invasion. So let's send a united consensus message to China.
Bob Fu has been my excellent guest, president of China Aid. We will be watching and praying for the situation as it unfolds in Hong Kong. And let us remember that the cost of human lives require us to call out the evils of human rights abuses. You've been listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry. We'll see you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.